Barnaby Howarth, welcome to My Worst Leadership Moment.
Thank you.
How are you, buddy?
I'm fantastic. Fantastic.
Thanks for agreeing to come on to Series 1, mate. And I'd like to say that, see what a good guy I am. I get you onto Series 1. It took you about like 5 or 6 series before you even invited me onto your podcast.
Ah, well, you're still breathing?
I am.
Good. Carry on then.
And it was a great experience, mate. Tell us a bit about yourself, mate, and what you're about, and share it about your podcast as well, because you're doing lots of great things.
So, stop it. It's a bit of a long story, but I'll try and give you the shortened version. So I had all these dreams and ambitions and huge goals in life before I was 25, but then I had a stroke when I was 25, which turned life on its head. I got a job at the ABC doing auto cue for the news, and I wasn't content that that was my place in life. I wanted to climb higher. So I applied for a few jobs at the ABC internally, but I just couldn't convince total strangers about the value I could bring to a role after acquiring severe brain damage and disability after the stroke. So I started a business as a keynote speaker on resilience. It was a bit of a side hustle initially, but it's kind of exploded underneath me and is now bigger than I can even manage on myself. But that's where my passion lies these days. So ABC is bread on the table and the people are sensational. I love working there. But the resilience stuff is my way of sharing my story. It's a real beautiful emotional outlet for me. So it's kind of selfish.
Mate, if you love it and you get that energy out of it, it means you're exuding that energy and that passion to your audience. So nothing wrong with it. It's got to start about ourselves first, because then that gives us the opportunity to help others, doesn't it?
Hopefully. Hope that's the ambition.
And what about Everyday Greatness podcast, mate? You're doing pretty good things there as well.
So Everyday Greatness is something that started off the back of how my speaking work and career is based. It's about the people and the relationships. So I was hosting a stand-up comedy night a few years ago, and a bloke came up to me and asked if I'd like to host an interview show. And I said, oh, maybe. What's it about? And he said, that's entirely up to you. You get all the guests and locations. I'll do all the recording and technical work. So I went away and created this show called Everyday Greatness, which was designed to show human beings that we all have greatness inside us if we just know where to look, where it's not just reserved for the, you know, the A-grade celebrities and sports stars and things. So I started it as a bit of a passion project. But I found with the people I've interviewed, they've all just been really good human beings. So I spoke to Adam Goods, Michael O'Loughlin, Tom Harley, Sam Mostyn, Gail O'Brien, and it doesn't seem to matter how big a celebrity people are or how successful they are. In fact, it seems like the more successful they are, the more it seems like they're just good human beings who do that small, intangible, fluffy stuff that everybody else thinks is a waste of time. And they keep doing it knowing that that's what's going to get them to where they want to go. And they get to where they want to go. So it's been a really eye-opening experience for me hosting it. Spoken to a bunch of other people, diabetics, sports stars, business people, carrot farmers, all sorts of people.
Yes, I do remember carrot farmers. So, mate, again, well done on what you're doing there. It's fantastic stuff. And it is, I resonate with what you're saying in that it does seem that as a general rule, those people that are sort of highly successful, they are generally good people. And maybe that's what makes them successful, because people want to help them, because they're not assholes. They're not bitches. They're just going about their stuff. They're good to people, and people help people that are good to them.
Exactly right. Yeah, I think they just show that old adage that the better you are to the world, the more reward you get personally. Mm. They're really good people. They give a lot of goodness to the world, so they receive a lot back, more than every other Harry Sackerolles.
Absolutely, buddy. Well, look, you're a pretty decent human yourself, and talking and linking to Everyday Greatness, what's the greatest worst leadership moment you've had?
The greatest worst leadership moment?
I had to use that.
It's an interesting way of asking a question. Well, that's a very deep and interesting question for me. So my biggest regret, therefore my worst leadership moment, was how I set my business up initially. So I had a stroke in 2005. I had these goals and ambitions. I wanted to be a CEO and, you know, have a 5-story house and 7 Lamborghinis and wanted to be bulletproof. But all of a sudden I was back to square one and I had to relearn how to live my life again. So when I was setting up my business, I actually set it up off the back of, I went and climbed Kilimanjaro with my little sister and a mate from footy. And I got back from that all inspired to start a business to offer adventure tours to people with disability, because it was so empowering for me and I got so much out of it. I thought that could be something that could be shared with the rest of the people with disability in Australia. But when I went to university and was doing a business diploma and realized that the market I'd be selling to just didn't exist, there weren't that many people with disability keen on adventure tours. So I had to shelve that idea. And then I thought, oh, I still need to sustain a lifestyle. So started this job as a keynote speaker. And my biggest regret was setting it up pretty casually. I just didn't have the brain power to set it up as beautifully, systematically as I should have. My business motto is be a good bloke. And the advice that was going through my head the whole time I was setting up was Cheap Wiggum from The Simpsons, where he says, if it feels good, do it. So I was just doing all this stuff that I knew was going to be a waste of time and was going to be really inefficient. Like one of the things I do in my business, I have an automated signature in my emails saying Barnaby Howarth. But if I'm emailing someone I have a relationship with or I'm trying to build a relationship with, I'll go in and manually delete my surname. And when I was doing it in the first couple of months, I thought, this is such a waste of time. I need to automate this and, you know, have someone else write it for me or get AI or do something. But I've just stuck with it. And now that is my point of difference. And that's probably the biggest strength of my business, that when people deal with me, they know they're dealing with a human being, not an automated chatbot or, you know, some sort of artificial Philippines-based chat room or anything like that. So my best worst leadership moment is also the best part of my business these days.
Mm. So really, I take from that is that what may have seemed and in on reflection not really an activity that provides huge value to your business from a monetary sense, but you are building a business and have built a business that is so relational, and the importance of relationships is there. So that little bit of non-value activity that you're doing there and then is actually the source that has created a level of connection and relationship with the people who you're dealing with.
Exactly right. So probably the best example of that is after one of those comedy nights I was speaking about, it was a fundraiser for Chris O'Brien Lifehouse, a cancer hospital in Sydney, and Chris O'Brien's wife, Gail, was there. And she came over to me halfway through the event and said, I'm flying to Hong Kong tomorrow. I've got to go early, sorry. And I said, oh, that's no problem. I'll walk you to your car. So we're on the third floor. I walked her down the stairs, out to the car park, to her car. Didn't think much of it, but just, you know, just thought that's what my grandfather, my father taught me to do. So I just did it. Rang Lifehouse the next day for something totally different. And all the girls were saying, what did you do to Gail O'Brien? I said, nothing. I just walked to her car. They said, she hasn't shut up about how nice that was that you walked her over. I didn't get $1 from that act, but it's such a, it just felt really good to be recognized for that. So I don't do any of it to try and add value monetarily, but the value you give is so much more important than earning a dollar. Mm. So yes, it's kind of a long way around making money, but I just find I'd rather do that and make no money and be able to look in the mirror than not do that, be, as you said, an asshole and be rich, filthy rich with that 5-story house and Lamborghinis. Mm. So yeah, that's just how I roll.
Mm. Yeah, you absolutely do, mate. And I think the thing around that in those sort of gestures is intent is the important thing. You know, your intent is not, if I do this, this might happen and this might turn into commercial. It's just you're doing it because your intent is just to be a decent human being at the end of the day, right? And if something comes of that, I mean, fantastic. You're open and receiving and you'll offer value, but it's not the reason why you do stuff.
Correct. And I think we live in a society now where people can see through that. Authenticity is a really sexy buzzword at the moment. So people are trying to be or appear authentic. But I don't think you can appear authentic. You either are or you aren't. If you genuinely are in a transaction for money, people will see that for what it is and they'll probably turn their back on you. If they see you're just trying to ask a question, have a conversation and get along, then they'll chat to you and be more open. And if, by the way, I've got $10,000 I'd like to give to you, then sure, I'll take it. But yeah, if that's your intention, then you're highly unlikely to get what you're after.
Mm. My bank account's on screen, mate, so feel free. I guess if I'm following this correctly, that sort of activity that seemed to be like inconsequential activity back to your signature, let's say, but those little points of difference which became a point of difference, how is that realization and doing that sort of stuff impacted your business, either from a positive and a negative perspective? How would you like to take that?
So perfect example to sum up the value and the success of that way of operating is I've just signed a deal with the Sydney Swans to co-host my podcast next year, Everyday Greatness. So that's just been a little side thing that I've been doing through my keynote speaking stuff. And I've been doing it as well as I could and, you know, not cutting corners and trying to add real value to the world. So I'm not doing it to try and get sponsorship dollars and corporate support and that sort of stuff. I'm actually trying to add real value to the world. And the Sydney Swans are an organization that are trying to do exactly the same thing. Mm. They don't worry themselves with the end goal. It's the advice I used to get from an old footy coach. Focus on the game plan. The result will take care of itself. So you do the small things in front of you as well as you can, and the big things take care of themselves in time. Mm. So I was just lucky that, as you were saying, sometimes you just meet people who are open to helping you out. And the Swans wanted to get involved in something that was adding value to the world, which is what Everyday Greatness is. And I was looking for some help from a larger scale business. And the Swans just happened to be that. So you just keep doing the right thing and eventually things work out for you. And this is just one of those examples.
Great example and congratulations, mate. Well done. I know you're giving a heads up to say I was in the wind, but well done, mate. Nice. Deal done.
Yeah, pretty.
The other thing I would say too, and for, you know, again, our listeners and watchers out there, that it's, I think what's an important point to make, that back to the relational side of your business, you actually, my view or my take on it is that back to your signature, you weren't actually necessarily taking the name out because you were being anal about something and just overly pedantic. There was some method to that level of intricacy that you're putting to it. Again, relationship, as you explained. That to me is a healthy level of detail in what you're doing and it aligns with your business and your values. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side of that, I would say that if you are doing it, and you haven't in this case, but if somebody is doing it in their business as a leader and it's because they like it a certain way or they like pink paper clips versus white paper clips or something like that, that's when that sort of detail and, you know, asking for that detail is quite unhealthy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's back to what you're saying about intent. My intent wasn't to be OCD and do it this way because I'm a stubborn toolbox. My intent, I think it came about because I was emailing someone from my family. And the signature popped up saying Barnaby Howarth. And I thought, no, actually it might have been Shay. I thought, no, I don't want it to be an automated, you know, really quick, obviously not thoughtless email that just I haven't put any attention into. I want her to know that I am emailing her personally, not just a spam bot. So it sort of came off that, and then I felt pretty strongly about the meaning of it. So it kept on going. But yes, I agree. It's kind of unhealthy if it's just if the intent is wrong. If your intent is to try and make yourself look authentic, then it's unlikely to work.
How come every time I get an email from you, it says Barnaby Howarth?
Exactly as I said. The people I want to maintain a relationship with, I delete my surname.
Just remember, we don't have to publish this episode, all right?
You can edit, can you? Mark's a good editor.
Mate, all this said and done, so this moment and what you shared, what did you learn from? What was some of your key takeaways from this experience in that moment?
That it's okay to be real. When I was setting up my business, I always had that thought in the back of my head that I was going to fall flat on my face because I always thought nice guys finish last. And I thought there's too many ruthless operators out there who just walk all over me. But you don't, being a good person doesn't mean you're a weak person. You can be good and strong and look after your backyard and, you know, fight the fight if you need to. But you just don't need to go out and start trouble where there is no trouble. So it just reaffirmed to me that there's not a them and us thing in the business world. You can be a good person and be successful at the same time. So it was very reaffirming for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're a leader in your business, you're a leader in the community, and again, you know, the Swans and partnering together obviously see you as a leader of people more broadly. So how has this belief and the moment that you shared shaped your leadership style from this day forward?
Well, I think it was just an innate quality. I was my school captain of my high school, so I always had that self-belief and determination to do things, which I thought was a waste of time. So that was the stuff I thought was useless, the small, fluffy, intangible stuff. I had grit, gumption, self-belief, determination, but didn't have that mystical X factor I thought the Adam Goodses and the Tom Harleys of the world had. But getting to speak to them and getting to know what got them through and got them successful was exactly the same stuff I've got, just regular ability to deal with challenges as you see them, grit, gumption, and that self-belief is really important. So my experience has helped me realize that I don't consider myself to be a leader. That's really nice you said that about me, but I just do my thing. And if people see that as leadership, then cool, no drama. But again, it's not my intent. I think people that go out to look like they're good leaders are usually pretty rubbish. I think just go out, try and be a good person, do the best you can. If you get faced with challenges, put one foot in front of the other. Keep a smile on your face, keep loving your family, and that's all you need.
Barnaby Howarth, you haven't failed to disappoint, mate. Not that I was worried that you would disappoint, but you know, what you've shared today on our worst or my worst leadership moment podcast is fantastic. And it's something that is everyone can pick up and do, can change their mindset, have a mind shift to just be a genuine person, be authentic, be nice to each other and just do the simple things right. And actually, even more importantly, I would say, is that you don't need to have an event like yours in your life, you know, a stroke, and there were sort of things leading up to that. But, you know, there were some horrific events involved. You don't need to have a life-changing event to do those sorts of things. You can just choose to do them today, this minute, this hour, this second. Just get off your ass, do it, and be kind to people. And that really underpins a good style of leadership.
Bloody oath. Very well said. And it's not rocket science. Just getting up, going, getting your brother a glass of water because he's thirsty. It's not going to take $10,000 donations to charities. It's the accumulation of all the small stuff that'll get you through.
Well said, mate. I want to thank you very much for being on our inaugural series and inaugural guest on this podcast. Anytime. Barnaby Howarth, thanks for being a great guest on My Worst Leadership Moment.
No drama. Thanks, mate.
Pleasure, buddy.